You're listening to a podcast from the Brookings Institution.
My name is Mwangi Kimenyi. I am a senior fellow here and director of the Africa Growth Initiative. And I would like to welcome you to this event. It's been, for most African countries, it's been about 50 years. Many countries are celebrating 50 years of independence. With that also, we are celebrating 50 years of what used to be at one time called the OAU, the Organization of African Unity. That was the one that was before the current African Union, which is now celebrating 50 years. And so this event, we are looking at where we have come from, but more so, we want to look at where we are going, not just in terms of the African Union, but where is Africa headed the next several years. So we want to be looking forward. As you know, the last few years, let's say the last decade, there have been a lot of optimism about Africa. We are talking about the rising Africa. We are talking about an emerging continent. There are many opportunities that now Africa presents, many opportunities for human development, for economic growth, and for even interactions with the international community. So here we will be talking about, you know, what do we see as we look forward the next several years of Africa, and also thinking about Africa as a continent with many countries, or whether looking at the issues of integration within Africa, but looking at where we would be going the next several years. So I thank you very much for your participation, and I'd like you to introduce the panelists with me here today, and then we'll have a discussion, and then we'll open it up for some discussion here. So the first speaker, the panelist, and also who is going to make a few remarks is Ambassador Amina Ari, who is the head of the African Union mission to the United States. Her Excellency works to strengthen the partnerships between the United States executive and legislative branches, other federal agencies, and the Bretton Woods institutions. Ambassador Ari is the African Union first female ambassador, and she serves on the eminent women panel to mainstream JEDA in IDB development policies. So, Ambassador Ari, welcome. The next panelist is Marcelo Gaugure. Hope I got it right. He's the World Bank's Director of Economic Policy and Poverty Reduction Programs for Africa. He has more than 25 years' experience in economic development in Africa, Central Asia, Europe, and the Middle East and Latin America. Welcome. To my left, immediate left here, is Alan Spence, who joins us as the editor and founder of News Desk Media. His organization has produced the two African Union reports. I should have mentioned that we have two reports that we are actually, African Union is launching at this time, which is the African Union at 50 and Invest in Africa 2013, a strong united continent. New Desk Media is a global media services organization specializing in the production of publications on behalf of prestigious public and private sector organizations worldwide. So welcome all of you, and we look forward to a fruitful discussion. And I would like to start by asking Ambassador to make a few remarks, and then I will go to the panelists.
Dr. Kimenyi, Excellencies, Ambassadors, and Member of the Diplomatic Corps, Dr. Marcelo Gaugure, Director for Economic Policy and Poverty Reduction Program for Africa, the World Bank, Mr. Alan Speck, our colleague from Newsdesk Media, distinguished participant, friends of Africa and colleague, member of the diaspora. Good afternoon. Allow me at the outset to thank the Brookings Institution and its leadership for the outstanding contribution it has made for nearly 100 years in order to advance the values of freedom, prosperity, and openness through helping policymakers and the public around the world address issues of critical importance related but not limited to foreign policy, the global economy, and development governance security issues. I would also like to pay a particular tribute to the Brookings Africa Growth Initiative, our partner, for the high-quality research, practical recommendations, and innovative solutions it has provided to the promotion of Africa economic development. I want particularly to thank my brother, Dr. Mwangi Kimenyi, as well as the able staff of the Brookings for their cooperation and key support in putting this event in collaboration with our mission. My sincere thanks go to Dr. Marcel Bugal, Director of Economic Policy and Poverty Reduction Program for Africa, the World Bank, and Mr. Alan Spence, Founder and Chief Executive of NewsDesk Media, for taking the time from your busy schedule to be participant in this event. Through this event, we would like to launch with you a reflection and a candid discussion on the key challenges, strategic issues, and priority facing Africa over the next 50 years, and how to find effective means of addressing them. We are confident that this exalting reflection will galvanize also our diaspora and our partners in the U.S., and hence contribute in inspiring a new generation of leaders that will serve as the vanguard of this movement. The ultimate objective of the African Agenda 2063 aims at the establishment of Africa as a global growth pole that will lead the continent towards an integrated, competitive, prosperous, and peaceful continent, driven by citizens that represent a dynamic force in the global economy and that has an important voice in world affairs in this 21st century. As you all know, Africa has commemorated the 50th anniversary of the OAU to AU with the theme Pan-Africanism in Africa Renaissance. This celebration has provided us an excellent opportunity to take stock of the key milestone of the past 50 years and to plan for a long-term perspective that will guide the future development of the continent for the next 5 decades or more. We do so with pride and with a pragmatic assessment of the challenges that still face the continent and with a renewed acknowledgement of the vital importance of Pan-African solidarity toward the achievement of a brighter future for all the people of the continent. Pan-Africanism, from its inception, placed African self-determination, solidarity, and self-reliance at the center of the continent people's struggle and effort. It is in this context that the African head of state and government, during the 50th anniversary summit, solemnly declared and made pledge to take all necessary measures using our rich natural and human resources to transform Africa and make it a leading continent in innovation and creativity. The African heads of state and government also took note during their last summit of the progress in the development of AU Agenda 2063 and endorsed the recommendation by the Executive Council calling upon the AUC to present framework document for consideration by African Union policy organ in January 2014 and final agenda to be adopted in June 2014. Fully committed to the implementation of the mandate from heads of state and government for the development of the Africa Agenda 2063 as a transformation vision for Africa over the next 50 years, Her Excellency, the chairperson of the AUC, Dr. Susana Dlamini Zuma, has highlighted in various occasions the importance of meeting the vision of integrated, prosperous, and peaceful Africa by 2063. She is a firm believer that member states, regional economic community, AU Commission, diaspora, and our own partners across the world have a key role to play to ensure that Africa takes responsibility of its own development and thus contribute to the building of a more just and equitable world. We are moving toward an intense period of consultation on the African Union Agenda 2063. Allow me to underscore that the process of preparing the strategic plan and framework for this agenda is consultative and participatory across the continent and the diaspora. It has started mobilizing a broad range of actors and stakeholders in support of a vision that will allow the attainment of prosperous and peaceful continent and ensure the transformation of its economic, social, and cultural paradigm. In this regard, the African Union, AUC, ADB, UNECA, these are the three strategic partners, cooperate very closely on the development of this transformation agenda for the continent for the next 5 years, the five decade. On the basis of their distinctive roles and responsibility, these three institutions are fully committed to support the vision of African leader to transform the continent over the next 50 years and collaborate closely with regional economic communities and other partners. The pillar of this new emphasis include infrastructure, regional trade, that is, inter-African trade, agriculture and food security, industrialization and human development anchored on peace and the rule of law, as well as an enabling environment for private sector participation. It has been underscored by the chairperson of the African Union in a recent meeting in Tunis regarding finance Africa's transformation. She said, "We are confident that we have a window of opportunity to set Africa on the path towards integration and prosperity. This confidence is founded on sustained economic growth of the last decade, improvement in human development indicators, steady progress in governance, and creating peace and stability. It is reinforced by the continental endowment, especially a youthful and growing population, potential unleashed by women's empowerment, urbanization, and natural resources, which, if harnessed in the interest of Africa's people, bodes well for the future. The current opportunity and challenges provide room for Africa to rethink the conventional approach to conducting business of development. It cannot be disputed, however, that more action is still required on a number of fronts in order to achieve the African Union vision of integrated, prosperous, and peaceful Africa in the global arena. The transformation of African economy still require a new and innovative approach to policy formulation and financing of the continent transformation. A paradigm shift of approach and a change in the mindset are essential to realizing the continental agenda for 2063. Some speak about promoting a new approach to development planning firmly embedded in the African experience, culture, capability, and institution. Major challenges abound: the need for inclusion and opportunity, the need for jobs, the need for transformation, and moving up to global value chain is needed. As you all know, the continent economic growth has now averaged 5% per year for more than a decade, higher than any period since the early 1970s. Between 200 and 2011, six of the world's fastest growing economies were in Africa, for example, Angola, Chad, Ethiopia, Mozambique, Nigeria, Rwanda, and many others. However, the focus on growth is not sufficient in isolation. The impact on the positive growth rate must be more widely felt. Africa's economic growth needs to promote greater equity, inclusiveness, the preservation of natural capital, and the creation of decent jobs, especially for the youth and women who constitute more than half of the population. The extent to which Africa achieves development aspiration and vision will very much depend on the capacity of institution. Africa has to transform its institution if it is to claim the 21st century. Africa needs strong institutions with the necessary capacity and resources to effectively establish and maintain a sound macroeconomic framework. We have continental framework, policy, and strategy in virtually every area of importance to our development. We also do not start on a clean slate. We have 50 years of experience from which to draw a lesson. However, a retrospective overview of the past half century shows that the establishment of the OAU, AU, and related frameworks and instrument has been fundamental to providing platform for deepened and wider cooperation among African countries. Yet progress has been slow due to numerous internal and external factors. Yet, therefore, to finalize my comment, I want to ask the question. I want to ask that as an introductory remark to help us in contributing to our panel. The first question is, how can the current African growth trajectory be sustained for another two or three decades to ensure that it consolidate the gain and transform the structure of African economies? Second question, how to ensure inclusive growth that address unemployment and lead to poverty reduction? Question three, what are the core changes that are required in how things are done to enable Africa to strategically respond to the rapidly evolving contemporary global landscape? For what are the challenges that should be addressed and the opportunity to be seized? The last question, what are the possible major risk, threat, and critical success factors? These include political, institutional renewal, finance, and especially to find internal resources in Africa, and resource mobilization issues, as well as the changing the nature of Africa's relationship with the rest of the world. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ambassador, for the remarks. I'm going to turn to Marcelo to make some remarks, assuming you are, I think, about 5 to 7, 10 minutes remarks.
Let me start by thanking very much both Brookings and the African Growth Initiative for inviting us here. I thought the best use of my 7 minutes would be to share with you what we don't know at the bank, meaning to take you to the border of our thinking, where really our ignorance begins. And it has to do with our envisioning of Africa over the next 10 years. We ask ourselves permanently, what are the big opportunities for developing Africa? What are the both low-hanging fruits and also the high-hanging fruits that policymakers in the continent could try to achieve to bring not just growth, but also prosperity, and to bring it to all? What the ambassador was referring to as inclusive growth. And I can tell you, my department has 220 professionals. Most of them are economists. So there are many opinions on this. As you can see, two economists produce three opinions. 220 produce zillions. But frankly, when I listen to all of them, and that's my role in the bank, to listen, what I find is a few clear opportunities and a few that are not so obvious but are perhaps the most important. The ones that make the newspapers and those that don't. Everybody now speaks of the era of discovery. The technology for exploration and exploitation of natural resources has never been cheaper, cleaner, faster, and more available. So even now, the bank, we have a project called the $1 billion map, where we fly airplanes, very low-flying airplanes, that can read down to 200 yards underground and tell you what is there in terms of hydrocarbons and minerals. And these engineers that do this tell me, Marcy, we only know 10% of what Africa has. We calculate that the other 90% is yet to be discovered. So the bonanza in terms of natural resources is not just about prices that could go up and down. The bonanza will be about quantities. That's a difference from the past. So the fiscal revenue that drives all this growth that we are now seeing and all these social programs is pretty stable and may get bigger. Of course, the question is it going to be wasted? So there you have one opportunity, the opportunity of discovery. The second opportunity is the opportunity of demography. In most African countries, child mortality is falling fast. This is the unsung success story of the development community. The countries, with the support of many donors and many good doers, have begun to reduce child mortality, which in turn is beginning to reduce fertility. The idea that the average African woman will have 6.5 children in her fertile life is pretty much history, except for a few countries where actually it's going up, mostly on the west of Africa. Now, if that's true, then what you're going to find is that there will be more workers per dependent person. And that has what we call a demographic bonus. You save money on the social side, and you get more income to the people that are actually working. Third opportunity, we speak about the second African agricultural revolution. And this one is not about greening. You know, it's not about just genetics and modified species. This is about policy reform, particularly land reform. Why is Africa not experiencing what Brazil experienced over the last 30 years? El Cerrado Brasileiro. Why are we not seeing massive investments in the millions of hectares of fertile and arable land not coming in order to bring new technology and exploit what is a so far totally unexploited possibility for Africa to be not just a commodity exporter on the hydrocarbon and mineral side, but also on the food side. And I'm not saying agriculture, I'm saying food. Okay, I'll come back to that. Fourth opportunity, my engineer friends tell me Africa is yet to start building its infrastructure. So they talk about the mega power plants, Inga. And they say, if we really get Inga going, the lights will be on in Africa. I don't know how much you travel in Africa. I happen to travel there every week, basically. And the power outages are just mind-boggling. In countries that are technical middle-income countries now, you know, you are lucky if you have 7-8 hours a day of electricity, and if you have two of those uninterrupted, it's a good day. So the infrastructure is yet to be built, no? And people are saying, well, we can link that to extraction of natural resources. You know, we can do multiple-use infrastructure built on the back of extraction, maybe. Fifth opportunity that we speak a lot about is China. And it's not China just the buyer of natural resources, which we expect will continue. Moreover, it will become a major buyer once the U.S. begins to be energy independent. But we also think about China as the supplier of low-skilled jobs. Our chief economist, I should say former chief economist, a Chinese economist, he calculated that China is about to shed, over the next 10 years, 85 million low-skilled jobs, simply because they are moving up the value chain. So a lot of what is now plain assembling or low-skill assembling will have to be exported out of China, 85 million jobs. How many of those will go to Africa? Which African country can capture those? Will they all go to South Asia, or is Africa going to capture, say, half of them? Is that the answer to the ambassador's question about unemployment? Or you should say unemployment. So there you have another opportunity. So we can go on and on opportunities, but let me speak now about the one that is the most, perhaps, silent, and to me, the most transformative, the one that will really show the leadership, or the lack thereafter, of Africa. And it's the fact that Africa is yet to integrate with itself. The continent has been a massive success at globalization, meaning selling things to the rest of the world, mostly commodities, completely integrated with the world. But inside Africa, the average African country exports or imports single digits from another African country, meaning the total percentage of exports and imports coming from another African country is less than 10% for the average country. Basically, the continent is fragmented. If anything, it has been a failure at continentalization. And I'm speaking about sub-Saharan Africa. The interesting part is, and I have to say, I brought you a couple of reports that prove it. You know, the bank always proves things, and then disproves them, but for now, this is what we think. This report is called Defragmenting Africa, and what it says is that's where the billions of dollars and millions of jobs are. Why? Because there are three markets that remain unexploited due to the fragmentation of Africa, the fact that it's so difficult to trade from one country to the other. And those three markets are food, and I mentioned to you we want to come back to that. Another report I brought you is called Africa Can Feed Africa. And essentially says there's no reason why famines should happen in Africa at all. You can't blame nature or fate. This is man-made. Okay? The food is there in the continent. It just cannot go across borders. So you have food that remains a broken market. You have services that remain a broken market, even in common, even in custom unions, like the East African custom union. You have giant skill differentials, say teachers, that cannot go from Tanzania to Kenya, or accountants that cannot go from Ghana to Nigeria, or truckers that cannot cross the border because the axles are all different, have different regulations, or even driving licenses are not recognized. The service of banks cannot be traded across borders. every bank has to be incorporated locally, which means huge investment needs rather than being branched out. So the service market also remains fragmented and unexploited. And the final one, which is interesting and goes back to these 18.5 million jobs that China is about to share, the success of East Asia was based on breaking down the production chain. When you buy a so-called Japanese car, you are buying components from at least 10 countries. So each country plugs the component that is technologically most appropriate to its own development. So you still get the gearing box that is computer controlled made in Japan, but most likely the tires come from Vietnam. That kind of breaking down of the production chain, which essentially requires totally open borders and fluid and rapid trade, today will be impossible in Africa, even in custom unions like the East African Community or SACU in the south. Now, you say, why? No, I mean, what's going on? Why are they not doing it? Well, it's interesting because you get declaration after declaration. We have a collection of political declarations. One just came out of Tanzania a few weeks ago, saying we will integrate, even if this is the last thing we do. In practice, it gets stopped. And when you really go down and look at it, which is the purpose of this report, it boils down to a few non-tariff barriers. Non-tariff. It's not about tariff. It's not about import tariffs. It's about how you regulate your input markets, say your seeds or your fertilizers at home, how you give monopoly power to transport companies that tend to be politically connected, tends to do with the uncertainty about what is possible and what is not. So you get to the border with your truck full of maize out of, say, Zambia, and that week Zambia said, no, we don't export maize. So you lost it, but you can't come back. And then finally, there is bureaucracy and corruption at the border. As part of this report effort, we sent a film crew. Can you imagine? Professional film crew. It wasn't just a few economists with a camera. This was real filmmakers, to film what happens to Congolese women trying to sell their produce into Rwanda. And mostly it's eggs. Okay, so we filmed them for a month and took statistics. And essentially, the effective export tariff that they pay in order to go across is equivalent to 40% of the produce. That's how many eggs they had to leave along the way. But more interesting, the chances of being sexually or physically abused when you cross is about 1 in 2. Now, if you cross every week, you know, and you do this for 20 years, you have to have a lot of guts to try that trade. So what happened is that the little trade that does happen in between among or between African countries is for the big guys. You have to be a big company to put up with all this. Now, again, this is all man-made.
Yeah.
I have 1 minute. Time is up.
Yeah.
So let me stop with this. We concluded back in the bank that there are many opportunities that are very clear. There is one that is perhaps the most powerful one that is unexploited, and it boils down to this, and it's almost ironic. When you speak to Africans, they tend to say, and they are right, that their past was frustrated by foreigners, by how they were treated by others. However, their future will be realized by how they treat each other. Let me stop there.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I thought I would give Aaron a little more time because he was going to talk about his reports, but we'll see how he goes. So take your time there.
It's Wangi. I'll be brief.
She's the timekeeper.
It's a great privilege to be here today, and I'd like to give my thanks as well to the Brookings Institution and to the Africa Growth Initiative for the opportunity to be here. I'd also like to say to Ambassador Ali that the partnership that my company has with the African Union is very much something that we treasure, that we value. And partnership is very, very much an important word, because if you look through the book that we have produced for the African Union 50th anniversary, the word partnership is a theme that runs all the way through it. And it's mentioned in the forewords by Dr. Zuma, it's mentioned by Ambassador Ali, it's mentioned by other people, and it's a theme throughout. And that is actually speaks of a big change, which is obviously taking place in Africa, but is taking place globally with respect to Africa. And that's very, very important, and that's a cultural change. It's an economic change, a financial change. And basically what we have between my company, Newsdesk Media, and the African Union is a sort of a mini-mini partnership as part and parcel of that big partnership, if you like. And the importance of it feeds into something else, which is that what this book does is it allows Africa, the African Union, to tell its own story. My company is just merely a facilitator. It presents the platform, if you like, but it is the African Union telling the story about Africa. Now, it's doing this in a way which is, in many respects, it's new, it's different, meaning in the last few years, because it's confronting issues, it's talking about the problems, it's talking about the challenges, it's talking about corruption, it's talking about HIV, it's talking about violence, it's talking about all the things. But it's doing it in a way in which these things are being confronted, the way in which programs are being put together, honestly, directly, and in partnership, initiatives to confront these things. And this is Africa talking about Africa. As I say, Newsdesk Media is just merely the platform for that. And Dr. Zuma says, actually, in her introduction, we must carry the good news as well as the bad. And the way in which we communicate with our people, partners, and those with an interest in our great continent is important to our relationships and partnerships. And that is absolutely true, because everything that my friend here talked about, the thing is that at the end of the day, you also have to communicate that. Mm-hmm. You have to... There's one thing discussing it in financial capitals and meetings and open meetings and the United Nations General Assembly and the meetings of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund and so on. But at the end of the day, you have to communicate what is happening in Africa and what people can do, will do, the way they're thinking, the aspirations of the African Union, the African peoples. I'll leave you to read the book, but I mean, briefly, it marks the achievements of the African Union in the last 50 years, moving away from its role in bringing about the downfall of colonialism, the lingering special relationships which also cut across development programs and so on because of resistance from previous colonial powers, freedom, development, and the pathway going forward to 2063. It's very important, this publication, because it engages, and it engages honestly and directly. And I'll come back to that point again in a minute, because that, of course, is what I do, because I'm a former financial and economic journalist. And it's a key theme. It's something very interesting for me as far as Africa is concerned. And as I say, it is Africa telling its story. It's the African Union talking about itself and where it's going and entertaining the criticism and bringing that in and meeting it head on, which is absolutely important. Now then, I like to do acronyms, so I've got one here. Which is called CLOPS. It doesn't mean a thing, but what it tells me is I just want to make a few points, if you like, to get the debate going, some good questions and debate, but a few headings. CLOPS: communications, context, leverage, opportunities, partnership, security. As I said before, communications is absolutely vital, because you can have all the plans, you can even have the money, but you have to communicate to your own people within Africa, your different countries. You talked about the differences. People have to understand what 2063 is all about and where it's going and what the African Union is doing. You have to sell the program every day. You have to sell the policies every day. And that is absolutely vital. So this publication, again, we also do another one, Invest in Africa, each year for the African Union as well. Little plug there. So communications, absolutely vital. Context is... excuse me a second. Context is absolutely vital as well, because the past 50 years, 60 years, 70, 80 years, there has been... The bad news is always there. You know, you can find bad news anywhere. And the fact is that people have been very willing to look for bad news in Africa, and Africa has provided bad news. So there's a bit of a market has been made there. But the fact of the matter is that while people have still been dwelling on bad news, there's been so much good news which has gone missing. And you referred to the Aung San story, the Aung San success story of the reduction in child mortality rates. Perfect example, because, you know, that story is not out there, and right. It should be out there. And it's a question of context. So, you know, there are things wrong in Africa. There are many things wrong in Africa. Hey, there are things wrong in Europe. There are things wrong in the United States, you know. You've got to see it within the context of where Africa has come from in such a short time. In 50 years, when you think of the way in which all but two powers, was it, in Africa, were controlled by colonial powers, the period of the wind of change blowing through Africa. You're not going to time me out, are you? Cheers. 1 minute, okay. Cheers. I've spotted the timer. Okay, so context. You've got to get the context right. Leverage. Things changed in 2008. The world needs Africa as a global engine of economic growth. That can be used as leverage. Opportunities. Using that leverage to build more equitable relationships in investment and trade. Partnerships. Partnerships of equals. No longer one-sided relationships. As Hillary Clinton said, it's a question of putting the value into Africa, not taking the value out. And also security, which we need to talk about as well. And that is African Union forces do great things. Conflict, resolution, protection, and so on. One thing I'd like to throw open to the floor when... I don't want to take your role from you, is the idea of cybersecurity, which I'm particularly interested in, as is my company. So I'll leave it there, but thank you for the opportunity to say those few words.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'll ask just a few questions, then we open up to the floor. We have spent a little bit more time than we thought. But I think when we think, we are talking about Africa, and all the my panelists here have been talking about Africa as one. If you look at each country, it has its own vision. Okay, if you go to Tanzania, it has a vision 2030, Nigeria, I don't know, 2025. And so my first question to panelists, and brief answers, is how are all these harmonized? How are these visions feeding into, so that we can talk about Africa? Because they seem to be probably all moving in a particular direction, but not necessarily as Africa, but as individual countries. But the other important question, and this is particularly for Ambassador, I think the real issue, and I think Marcel also emphasized this, is really, when you talk about Africa, you really have to talk about regional integration. Mm. You really have to say, you know, you are talking about a country that is integrated, is trading with each other. Now, we have the plan for 2017, a continental free trade area in 2017, meaning that in 2017, we would be crossing all those borders that Marcelo is talking about with any problems. So, you know, how realistic is all this, as you see it, and what we have in terms of strategies to do that. So, Ambassador, I'll give you like a minute, then.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Hineni. Actually, as you said, Africa is integrated. But we are a block. At the same time, we all dance on our own tune. Hmm. But our leaders realize that the need of integration is really is needed, and it's very important for development of Africa. So during the last summit, our leaders approved the Continental African Continental Free Trade Area. And of course, they gave 2017 as the day that we all have emerged as a free trade area, one block. Now, whether it's going to be realized, people are asking, is it going to be realized or not realized? But I always give them answers saying, this is our own decision. And we've already seen in the southern part of Africa, we have a tripartite trade agreement. And that will take the whole block of East Africa, Southern Africa, SADC, as well as COMESA. And we also took analysis trying to see the other block, Western Block and Central. What is there? What we can do to be able for them to fast-track development, especially to be able to be free trade area like the other one. So that's why we all agreed, especially our president signed an agreement saying by 2017, we believe Western Africa, through ECOWAS, as well as Central Africa, they will fast-track their own economic policies to be able to be a free market. Now, with respect to the vision of economic development, how are we going to harmonize? Before the anniversary, we were all having, of course, 7-year development strategy for Africa. But then we realized we need to have two strategies for Africa. We need to have African strategy, and also we need to have African Union strategy. So we are preparing 2063 in that framework. African countries, because I'll give you an example. When we talk about integration, we had a road, let's say, road project that linked maybe 3 or 4 or 5 countries. But you find that project takes 6 years, 7 years, 8 years. That was an example of World Bank project. It took a lot of time. Why? Because, as I said, our countries, they have their own priorities. So now what we are saying, our countries, together, through 2063, we will have their own priority, but harmonize. At the same time, African priority that will support, that will also give a lot of value to the member countries' program. For instance, let me talk about 1 minute about the infrastructure program. We have PIDA. PIDA is a program for infrastructure development for Africa. And this project took a lot of time. It is between African Union, ADB, UNECA, and our partners. And in this project, we have 59 infrastructure projects that will link member countries together and form a continent, a free continental free trade area. So in this project, for instance, we have power project. Power project is for we have 5 projects, one in South Africa, one East Africa, one West Africa, Central Africa, and the northern part of Africa. And then we talk about how are we going to connect. If you don't have road network, if you don't have a train, because you will continue, you can increase your production capacity. But if you don't have proper infrastructure, proper road to be able to transport your products, you're not going to compete, because there is a statistic that says the products from Africa is 5 times expensive than products from China. So all those things, they push us to have a harmonized African strategy for development. At the same time, it also forces member states through our leader, their own economic vision, some country vision 2020, another vision 30, they are all going to move together with African Union. And I believe 2063, this strategic framework will enable to have that answer.
Thank you very much. Marcelo?
Very quickly, the question specifically says, how do we make these commitments reality? You know, how do we bring integration to be real for the average citizens of the continent? Allow me to suggest 5 very simple steps. First is, do not just focus on tariffs. This is not anymore about tariffs. Yes, you have to get rid of import tariffs or make them uniform and low. All that is good and necessary. But the biting constraint, the one that is now limiting the integration, is non-tariff barriers. This is like swimming across a river. You cross halfway, you can't celebrate. And there's no point in going back anyway, because you're halfway. So the second half is the non-tariff barriers. Second is bring social accountability to integration. Make it an issue of the people. Make sure that those small traders at the border between Goma and Rwanda have a way to complain. Make it very public. Use my colleague to my right here. Make it a communication issue. Social accountability is critical here. Take it from the big summits down to the person trying to trade at the border. Number three is don't stop at goods. Make sure that integration goes beyond goods. It has to be an integration of people and of capital as well. I don't know my African colleagues here, but have you noticed how difficult it is for you to find and get a visa to the African country next door? It's easier for me. How do you explain that? Now, none of this is easy. I mean, the European Union took 60 years, and it still is not very well done, right? I mean, it's still half-cooked. But still, we had to move somewhere. So make it also about not just goods, but people and capital. Number fourth is don't just focus on projects, but focus on the policies behind the projects. Why is it that electricity supply is so unreliable and so limited? Is it just because we need more money and more projects and more cement and pipes and wires? I'm sure we do need that. But once you build that power plant, if you don't have the right policies, particularly pricing policies, the power plant becomes a fiscal drain. Somebody has to pay for the subsidy. And soon enough, becomes a source of corruption and friendship and clientelism. So the power plant never gets built. The private sector doesn't want to be part of it. So the policy framework of the project is almost as important as the engineering part. So integration is not just about hardware, it's also about software. And then my final point is use your natural resource magnets. What do I mean by this? Well, you have a few countries in the continent that are just going to boom on natural resources. Think about Mozambique and its gas. This makes it a perfect magnet to integrate with the neighbors. Imagine what Malawi could do if it had complete access to the markets in Mozambique. One Mozambique begins to benefit fully from the gas. People are expecting that GDP per capita will quadruple in Mozambique on the steady state. So those will be great customers for Malawian agriculture. So anyway, these are practical steps. I think these are doable. The question is to actually go for them.
Yeah, I mean, I would add, you mentioned the European Union there, the European community. The big advantage that Africa has over the European community is that you can actually look at a map and see Africa, whereas for the past 200 or 300 years, we've been trying to define what Europe is. Mm. I mean, Europe is, coming to a station near you. It's steadily moving over. It's, it didn't used to include Eastern Europe, but it does now in terms of the European Union. Is it going to Turkey in or out? Russia one day. I don't know. I mean, and it's so you can actually look at a map and see the objective. Which is great. I mean, once you can actually see an objective, then you're at least some way towards getting there. Once you've defined your goal, it is geographically intact and complete. I would just come back to, given that that is the objective and you can see it, I would just come back to the communications issue. I take on board all the points that my colleague here has said. How do you actually integrate it all? Well, you do all the things that he's talking about, and there are other things as well, but it comes back to communicating the message. And I wonder here about the social media, because, of course, Africa has leapt beyond terrestrial land-based phone systems. It's taken that big leap forward. It's gone over them. And there is this massive capacity building. Now that is, and markets are being built on telephony in Africa, and so you know, labour markets, commercial markets and so on, for produce and whatever. And I think, actually, you could think in terms of an economic or political market in mobile telephony, the social media being used increasingly, perhaps by, and I'm sure you have your plans there, Ambassador, to actually promote 2063 and where it's going and how to get there, to engage at every level. And I think social media will have a big role to play in that.
Very good. I think because we started a little late, I would like to stop with the panelists and open it up to a discussion from the floor. I guess one of the issues that doesn't seem, you know, I mean, I am, of course, very optimistic about Africa and the unity and also looking forward. But I am also quite concerned that even as we talk about Africa and regional integration and a continental free trade area, we still have issues within the same countries. We still have not united the African countries themselves. You know, you still have a lot of problems in many of these countries. And so we still need to, as we talk about this good picture looking forward, we need to keep that in the background. So please be brief and make comments, straight, and then we'll have like three questions and comments. So why don't I start? Okay, so we will start at the back, the gentleman at the back, and I'll come front. Yeah. Comments, please.
Thank you very much for presenting the governing class and political class of Africa's position. I am Yaya Fanusi. I'm the lead person for the United States of Africa 2017 project. There will be a referendum 2017 on the Federation Treaty and Constitution, in which 45 of the 54 countries will vote yes to form a United States of Africa like America. Ambassador Salim, we will provide the money to the African Union to conduct the referendum.
Yes, the gentleman there.
I thank you very much, the Brookings Institution. And I liked, most of the thing I heard, the hope about Africa. I did my research on...
Could you identify yourself?
My name is Nyaka Lagoke. I'm from the Ivory Coast. I've been living here for 12 years. And I did my research on regional economic integration. And then as I was doing my research, I discovered... that the primary source of the problem in Africa, according to FOFAC, Hippolyte, who works at the World Bank, is not corruption, poverty, everything you guys have spoken about, but the loss or the lack of a vision. Will you please comment on that? Thanks.
Okay, very good. So can I go to the gentleman at the back, then I'll come in the middle, the one sitting there. Yeah.
Ken Meyercourt, World Docs. How would you rate the performance of the AU when NATO chose to depose one of Africa's leading lights, Mr. Gaddafi?
Could I get quick answers? Some of these, maybe one of the first one doesn't require an answer. Could you come to the middle, the gentleman in the middle there? Then I'll come to the lady here. Then we'll come to the panelist.
Thank you for great presentations. My name is Duza Baba, a former graduate student from SAIS around the corner here, and now I'm back in Nigeria, actually experiencing regional integration in person. So there was something that was said about infrastructure, and I wanted to find out what is the role of standardization or harmonization in towards helping harmonization. An example, Madam Ambassador, in Tanzania, I'm aware that, probably Germans built tracks, train tracks, using a different gauge. Chinese built train tracks using different gauges. So even within Tanzania, it would be hard to connect those rail lines. And further question on the rail lines. If we could integrate across countries using rail, that's much harder to stop than trucks going across roads. So why isn't more happening with rail? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Could I get quick comments, Ambassador? And we want to be brief so that we go another round of questions.
Yeah, the first question about maybe comment on referendum for United States of Africa. I think the way I understand, because I'm in the commission, is that even if you look at the Lagos Plan of Action and the Abuja Declaration, you will find that we have decided to build economic community for Africa. And that's why one step to reach economic community for Africa is to have free trade area. Once we have free trade area, which would address all the issues about Africa, internal issues about Africa, non-tariff barrier, question of movement, free movement of people, free movement of capital, all those things will be addressed. But he's talking about political union. And right from 1963, we had two visions, two sort of thinking. Some of the leaders thought maybe we can immediately form a political union. Some other leaders thought maybe why don't we build our regional economic community? Once this community is stronger economically and politically, then we can merge this economic these regional economic communities to make one block of political union. So I think the process has slightly changed, not much, but we believe let's build the regional economic community, our own communities, like ASEO community, we have COMESA. Let's build those communities and try to take one step further, which is to have economic community. So although political union is in our agenda, but I think all these two blocks, the West and Central, the South, East, and North, why once they have the merge through free trade area, I think that will be easy for us now to continue discussion on building political union. Because it's not an easy decision. We have two, even up to now, we still have two blocks, two thinking. Now, the question of referendum, that I think our head of state may discuss if this point comes from the diaspora. Maybe they may have opportunity to discuss and take a decision. Now, with question about standardization of our, let's say, maybe our railway lines, standardization of our education system. It's not only on railway, but there are so many things we need to have standardized, harmonized system. Some countries in Africa still they are using metric system, others they are using the other system. But as far as railways is concerned, we have a program within PIDA for countries to be linked through railway line because we believe it's cheaper to transport bulky commodities, bulky products by road. And of course, the road we don't have right now that can connect one side of the continent to the other. So you can imagine, since independence, from the Ghana independence until now, we didn't even build another new railway line except Tazara, Tanzania and Zambia. So, yes, there was a need. It was realized, the need to have railway line, but also now to study all these railway lines that we have. How do we standardize? How do we have a broader system for all of us? Because now from Tanzania, Tazara and all Tanzanian railway line, they don't go together because the Tanzanian railway line is a different system, while Tazara is a different system. And also to connect Tazara to the Southern African railway system, those are the things that PIDA is addressing, and there's a president have already approved those programs, and right now we are popularizing this program and tell our partners that come join with us, we have opportunity for investment, come invest in those countries. The last question was about lack of vision. No, I don't want to agree with my brother talking about Africa. We don't have. Maybe I can say we have too many vision. We have vision from our member states. We have vision from Africa. We have vision even from our partners. They help us to prepare vision. You can call any name, 2020, 2021. We have all those vision. What is missing is implementation. We have so many books talking about Africa 2020, Africa 2013, but in terms of implementation, I think in two things.
Because some of those visions, we don't start from the grassroots. It comes from top. So that's why we have 2063. We have realized the government, our government have vision, but we have to harmonize all these visions and try to find resources to be able to implement those visions. We have to create buy-in to our own people to be able to support those visions and also to have our partners support those visions. So I think 2063 is the right vision, and that's why it is a consultative process. We want to everybody who is interested, the diaspora, partners, member countries, to be able to talk about it and suggest ways, because this is the vision that will also look into future for Africa, at the same time to see what will be our member states' vision, so that we can all work together to be able to reach our intended objective. Thank you.
Thank you. Any comments?
No, I think I will just subscribe to what the ambassador said on the issue of why regional integration is not happening. I also would submit that if it is a lack of vision or papers or a strategy, deep down is a lack of leadership. You know, collectively saying we need to do this and we do it. I don't expect this to happen overnight, nor do I expect it to happen out of a suddenly enlightened leader that descends upon us and does it. My money is on democracy and information. I think the more voice and data people have, the more these things will begin to happen. If there is one fundamental change that is also very subliminal in a way, is that the average citizen in the continent is much more informed than he was before, even in systems that are less than democratic. So the political competition will happen anyway, whether you have a voting democracy or a non-voting one. That's where I think the change will come. So I think the role of many of us, many of these multilateral institutions, is to put information in the hand of people in a way that people understand it. This is good for you. This is good for your child. You want an education. You want a job. You want food. This can happen through this. In simple terms, if we can communicate all these esoteric technical ideas, I think we are making a huge contribution to the transformation.
Do you have any?
Yeah, just very, very briefly, there was a point made about the African Union in Libya and how did it look when NATO brought Gaddafi down. I'm not an expert on Libya. I do remember at the time the rough treatment that a lot of African Union representatives did get in Libya when they were trying to broker peace there. And to me, I mean, I'm a director of the Atlantic Council over here, and that's quite close to NATO and so on. There was very much a feeling that the African Union had done an excellent job in trying to bring parties together. And I remember films of delegates being very roughly treated. I mean, it wasn't a unilateral decision, on the other hand, by NATO to bring down Gaddafi. I mean, everybody across a very wide perspective bought into that for all sorts of reasons, including the Arab League and African Union and others, not officially necessarily, but different parts. So I would just make that point, and the African Union really did try very hard.
Very good. I'll go to another round of questions, but I think one of the issues, as we talked about African and the responsibilities, if you read the Kofi Annan's report, one of the big problems that is really putting Africa back is on the illicit capital flows. Mm-hmm. And this is basically not just an African problem. It's also a developed world problem. I mean, these flows are coming to U.S. and Europe, and I'd like to hear some commentary on the role of these other countries as far as, because you talk about natural resources, but we know that a lot of these resources are coming back, but illicit flows. Okay, I'll take... now I'll start with this lady in here, brief question, and then I'll take the gentleman there, and then...
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Rosemary Seguero. I'm the president of Hope for Tomorrow. Thank you so much, Ambassador Mina. and think you said you want to hear from the African story. I'm an African from Kenya, born and raised in Kenya, being an African woman. Our organization focuses on elections. We observe elections. We observed the Kenya election 2013. We'll be observing Malawi, South Africa, and other countries. Ambassador Ali, what happens or what could the African Union do to the African countries on violence and conflict before and after elections? Because we have always had problems before election and after election. What happens and what is the African Union telling the countries to do on this? And lastly, as a businesswoman, again, I'm saying unless Africa involves the African diaspora themselves on the table, not when after you make a resolution or a report, you bring us on the table to hear about what is happening in the Africa. We want to be part of the decision making. We want to see what can we do and what can the diaspora and how can we be involved on the table to talk about growth, not leaving small and medium businesses. Those are the growth and development of Africa. Let them be supported, capacity building, financial support to make Africa grow. Thank you.
I'm gonna, whoever I'm gonna pick now, promise that you ask a question. And then I'll do that. Okay, so the lady here and the gentleman back there, then we'll take three, and I'll take the other gentleman there.
Good afternoon. The question I would like to submit to our distinguished panel is that in this process of continental integration, how do you balance the interests of large states and small states so that the large states don't overshadow the interests of small states and that international dependence doesn't become regional dependence?
The gentleman at the back, the other at the back. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I'm a grad student at American University. First, I would like to comment about the presentation by Mr. Marcelo. That's, I think, the most brilliant, concise, but comprehensive, exploration of the issues that I've heard about Africa. Another question is about the African Union, that there's a lot of criticism about the African Union that in terms of effectiveness, they don't have, the usual criticism is that the African Union doesn't really have leverage in terms of doing or achieving whatever they're trying to do. So what, in specific terms, are what are the leverage the African Union have in terms of doing whatever it's planning to do? So that's
There's a gentleman over there, right over there, and if you could all be brief.
Sure. Hello, my name is Pierre Tanchu. I work with CSI as the Africa program. You've touched on power and regional integration. I was just wondering, during his trip, President Obama announced the Power Africa and Trade Africa initiatives. I was wondering if Marcelo and Ambassador Ali could kind of tell us what did they think the lofty goals that have been set by those initiatives, do you think that it could actually be met? And how important do you think those initiatives will be in the future, in the next 50 years?
Very good. One final question. That lady over there, she jumped fast. Yeah. Question.
Good afternoon. My name is Michelle McGonigal. I'm a consultant, most recently with the United Nations World Food Program. I know there's so much assistance that's going towards the continent and also towards the African Union, both bilaterally, multilaterally, and I'm just curious to ask the panel, what's the right kind of assistance? There's so much food aid, there's technical assistance. What's working, what's not working, and how can we do better? Thanks.
Thank you. I think I'll start with you. Any question?
Okay, well,
Alan.
Yeah. I'll be very brief. I mean, taking that last point there, what is the best sort of assistance? I mean, the best sort of assistance that any organization, multilateral agency or whatever, can provide is assistance which allows African countries to develop sustainably and to actually get to the point where they don't need that assistance and they actually become competitive players on the global stage in all sorts of industries and sectors. That sort of assistance allows them to develop and diversify into and so on. And anything and everything which comes down to the, as far as the raw materials are concerned, so that, the beneficiation of these that the value is kept in Africa further down the supply chain. So you're not supplying raw materials, you're supplying manufactured products that derive from and derivatives of derivatives of derivatives, and take it as far up the technology chain as you possibly can, and retaining the knowledge and the expertise. So, I mean, that's the best. Now, the extent that is actually taking place, it's better than it was, but, you know, a hell of a lot more needs to be done. Just one other point on this question of big states, small states, in relationships. This is something that I think of quite often, but coming from a big state, a small state. We've been very friendly with a big state, United States. So, you know, how do you actually balance the relationship? Well, I mean, that's where the African Union comes right into play, because, I mean, that is where representatives from all states, regardless of their size, meet together. And that's, to me, that's, you know, the perfect forum for that to be played out.
Thank you.
Just very quickly, I can see the question on associating a big country with a small country and the danger that could bring dependency of the small country vis-a-vis the big country. Yes, true. There is dependency in the sense of you depend on this big customer, but there is also prosperity attached to it. Now, you might want to diversify both in terms of destination, product, channels, but you don't want to ignore your big customer. You know, if I were Malawi today, all my intra-Africa growth strategy will be geared towards Mozambique. It will be silly to ignore that customer. It will make me depending on that customer, possibly. But that's trade, you know, and that's where your trade strategy comes in. That's a lot better than ignoring that big potential magnet of growth that you have just next door. I'm not saying that they are ignoring it. I'm saying that they have not been able to unlock the potential yet. And then the other question is on food. I love what you do, and please continue doing it. But frankly, and I know this is a totally private, confidential meeting, nothing will be repeated, by the time the food is necessary, it's almost too late. By the time you had to do something, it's almost too late. Then, yes, some donor has to fly the food and carpet bomb the place with bags of something. Before that happens, there is so much we can do. You know, one agenda in Africa that is very close to my heart, and we have a team dedicated to this, is the gender agenda. Okay? For all its beauty, much of the work done in farming in Africa is done by women. Now, these small female farmers are the ones that are going to benefit the most by letting food go to the right places, fluidly go across borders. You can hit a triple agenda with one instrument. Very rarely in economics do you see these things. You can hit the growth agenda, the poverty agenda, and the gender agenda with one policy, which is integration. It's a low-hanging fruit.
Thanks. Ambassador, briefly, 1 minute.
Yes. I would like to talk about the issue of election observation. African Union realized that there's a need to observe election before election and after election. Because before election, there are certain issues that can impact on the election and after election. So since 2 years ago, after the Zimbabwe, the first election that created problems. So African Union, we did have a resolution, a charter on election and democracy. And in that charter, it has mandated African Union to observe, to send a team to observe, I mean, to observe the election process before election, and also to stay behind to see the implementation of the election process. So, for example, election for Kenya, we had our team before. They were there in Kenya, and they did what they were supposed to be done. At the same time, right now, they've gone to Zimbabwe, like two or three months ago, to be able to observe preparation for the election, and also to help Zimbabwe to have a very successful, peaceful election. So I think we are more now organized to be able to observe this election in any countries in Africa. And before, there was a clause in the Constitutive Act. They said you cannot observe election unless you are invited as AU, invited as AU. But that clause has been removed. So now AU, we don't wait for invitation. We do our duty to send a team in those countries to be able to prevent anything that might happen during election and after election. Now, another thing I want to answer, this is with respect to the question of power in Africa. For me, energy, the whole spectrum of talking about energy is very, very important for African development. And in that respect, we have a number of programs. And some of the projects are already now working. For instance, the project between Nigeria, Cameroon, and Ghana, in terms of electricity project, mm-hmm. is working right now. It took a lot of time, but it's working. And also, Africa, right now, we have some countries have been so lucky. Now they have discovered new type of resources. For instance, gas in Mozambique, gas in Tanzania. So these resources will be used to be able to provide power to other countries, member countries in those areas. And I know right now Tanzania and Kenya, they were talking about selling the gas in Kenya. So all the things, Africa is well prepared this time because we see determination, we see commitment of our leaders. We had political liberation, and I believe some of my friends in Addis talk about economic liberation for Africa, and I believe they can do. And lastly,
we may not be able to answer all of them.
Okay, so I think I should. Yeah. I should end there. Thank you.
Sorry, Ambassador, for cutting you. I think the time is okay. Over, and we don't want to delay a lot of people. I think these questions are very good, and I wish we had more time for conversation. And I apologize for the many people that we are not able to respond to come to. But I want to join me to thank my panelists here. Thank you very much for joining us.